Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. We have one of my favorites, Dr. Nancy Bailey. She has been on the War Report almost from, not quite from its beginning, but during that first year and second year and part of this year. She has been almost like a semi-regular, and it's always, always a pleasure for me to have her on the show. For those of you who maybe have not heard the shows when she was on, Dr. Bailey is one of the maybe two or three people that when she's on the show, I have to watch myself. I can't use some of the F words. I can't use some of the other words I will use occasionally. I wanted to be a little bit more proper because she and two other ladies, it's like when I do something like that, you can feel it that they're looking at you, even if you have your back to them. Like when I was growing up and my mother, when she and I would go to other people's homes and et cetera, and I'm over in a corner playing and I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing, I could feel her looking at me. And I would turn around and turn around slowly, and sure enough, she would be looking at me, and I knew then, when I got home, I was in trouble. So, Nancy, welcome back.
You really know me very well. If you could hear the way I talk when I'm by myself, I have my own temper and my own issues, and I don't really judge you like that, but, you know, if I keep you on the straight and narrow, then, you know, okay, that's good, I guess, but... Anyway, it's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Our topic, if you got our promotion, you know, it deals with the question of, is there a teacher shortage in America, really? I think our title is, teacher shortage, is it manufactured shortage or is it a natural shortage? And is the shortage reaching or has reached crisis level? And before I go even any further, when I came up with this topic for this week's show, I had not seen Nancy's post on that same title, almost, teacher shortage, almost same title. And she has a new book that will explain how we got to where we are now. And she and I will do a book review next Sunday. So actually, there's going to be a part two to this show. So let's get that out front right now. There will be a part two, and we'll be going over Nancy's book, and she will explain to all of us how we got to where we are today and possibly what we can look to going forward, especially with Mr. Trump assuming the throne fairly soon. So with that, welcome, Nancy.
Thank you.
And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm probably like you, considering that both of us have just recently moved.
Yes.
Almost for me, across country. From you, it was from, I guess, what, Middle America to Southeast Coast?
Right, the Atlanta states. I've moved from Memphis to Virginia. So it's. I never like to move, but... it's quite a beautiful state here, and I'm getting settled still. But I miss Memphis, but I like Virginia, so it's okay.
and
you're in Buffalo, I take it? That's a bit different from California.
Don't get me started. I'll just say I'm freezing parts of my anatomy off. See, I would normally tell you what that anatomy is, but see, today is I'm just freezing parts of my anatomy. Okay, Nancy, you are very, very much up on the situation as relates to what's happening to the teaching profession and have been for a number of years. My question to everyone in terms of what this show is about is, is there a teacher shortage crisis?
Okay, go ahead.
I say, depending on how you define it, will determine whether or not there's a real crisis or there's no crisis at all. So, is there a crisis? What do you think?
You know, it's not exactly what I think. I think it's what really exists. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure. I do know that if there is a crisis, there's not really much of an effort to attract teachers to a profession. And I feel like there is probably, and that there probably has been a push for 20 to 30 years to drive credentialed teachers out of the classroom, and teachers who move up the step to where their salaries are a little bit higher, the veteran teachers, out of the classroom. I think that has been going on for a long time. But whether or not there's truly an overall shortage in all of the states right now, I think it depends on where you go and whether there's, you know, I know, for example, that teachers have told me in Nashville that they're having trouble covering certain classes. And also Nashville, you know, if there really is a shortage, then I question why so many school districts don't have contracts for their teachers yet, you know. There just are so many ways that you could attract teachers to the profession, and that's not happening right now. What's happening is a push for alternative teachers, a push for, you know, the groups like Relay Graduate School, Teach for America. There's more of a push for them, I think. And when you look at College of Ed programs, you find that those teachers, when they're preparing to be teachers, they get extra hurdles that they have to jump. So it seems like there's sort of this diminishing of what a teacher is. That's what I'm more worried about now. I'm not sure if there's an exact shortage yet. Now, to prepare for this program, I did look up the USDOE had a report in August, and they claimed that, you know, there's shortages and for teachers to teach bilingual ed, special ed, math, science, reading specialists. And those areas have had shortages for years. We've known that. And, again, I don't see any kind of special ways or special attempts to recruit teachers in those areas. If anything, special ed, there's a real push to not have special ed so much anymore. And if you look at College of Ed programs, I got into a little testy argument the other night with someone on Facebook who is a professor who was a little bit miffed because I had questioned the colleges of education. And my concern was that for areas like learning disabilities, they don't study those areas in depth anymore so much as giving teachers sort of a blanket class in gen ed. So there's just a lot going on that I think is diminishing the profession, James. Whether that's actually affecting schools, you know, we hear all the time about teachers that are leaving because they're unhappy. And then we also hear about where they're being driven out of places. You know, like in D.C., Michelle Rhee was sort of giving a payout to teachers to leave, right? Wasn't there something?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it just kind of depends. If there's a shortage, it depends on where you're at. But my concern has been a sort of a created shortage so that, and my belief is like so many right now that ultimately it's to push everybody online where teachers, whether it be fewer teachers and more facilitator type positions for people to keep kids in line and online, you know, just to keep them on their programs, and fewer teacher, you know, like what we have today. I think it's just there. It's really in a state of disarray right now as to the teaching profession and whether it's going to continue the way it has been in the past. So that doesn't really answer the question. I think, you know, some people claim that I know that the Learning Policy Institute with Linda Darling-Hammond found that 75% of 211 districts reported difficulty filling positions, so that's a concern. But then when you go to school districts, it doesn't seem like they make it very easy. If you're a real teacher, to get those positions, you have to still, you know, jump through a whole lot of hoops. And yet, if you're someone from Teach for America or one of the fast track programs, you can probably get a position a little easier. But even Teach for America has had trouble recruiting students from the universities because they are concerned. A lot of the kids or the young students don't think that teaching pays very well. They think that's one of the problems there. So lots of different things going on, James, and I don't know if I was very clear with all that. I just think that it's kind of an unknown, it's more to me a concern as to how we're attracting young people to be in teaching and what teaching is going to be like in the future.
Nancy, you're being uncertain as to whether or not you answer the question. Really is an answer to the question, because I had said to you not too long ago that it's a crisis, it's a shortage, depending on the way in which you look at it. Mm-hmm. And by that statement, I mean the following. When 2008 hit and there was this austerity program instituted across the country, but education is always the first social institution, public institution, to be cut, always. No other department gets cut faster and deeper than public education at the federal level, at the state level. Hundreds of thousands of teachers across the country were furloughed, out and out let go, creating this, quote, shortage. But at the same time, there was a cutback in the variety of classes that were given. You know, history was cut back. In some cases, eliminated. The arts, music, after-school activities, all of these things were affected, and hence the personnel, be it teachers, paraprofessionals, lost their jobs in connection with this austerity movement. Mm-hmm. So, you can say, oh, yes, there is a teacher shortage, but look how you got there. Take it further. When we start to recover, there were cities like Chicago. We know about New Orleans when Katrina hit. They just wiped out all the teachers.
Right.
They had contracts. Didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the court restored that, and they were sued, and court decided in favor of those teachers who lost their job. So New Orleans could say, for a while, we have a huge shortage of teachers. And you can go across the country and you can see that teachers have been decimated, their ranks have been decimated.
Mm-hmm.
And when this happens, yes, you create a shortage. And let me go even further in terms of, it was 2 weeks ago that I came up with the idea for the show for this week. I was in a meeting and we're talking about a program, and Nancy, do you know this program, Grow Your Own Teacher program?
Well, I haven't heard of that one, no.
Okay. Grow Your Own Teacher is an idea that came up when states and school districts were saying there was a shortage of teachers and it's going to get worse. And at the federal level, money was put together so that a program called Grow Your Own Teachers came into existence through legislation. And places like, say, Alaska, where the population is spread out over this huge land mass, and there is a shortage of teachers there. And the idea was that why don't you get the students in your schools, high schools, and introduce them to the idea of becoming a teacher. Then we will support them when they come out of high school, into college. Some places they pay the tuition, some places they pay the tuition, room and board, and all these things. And when you come out of college, if you will go into teaching, and especially speaking specifically of Alaska, if you would go back to your remote village and be a teacher there, we will take care of solve this teacher shortage. Made sense for areas like that. Well, the program grew until it's in Kansas, it's in, I can't remember all the states now that have a program.
And who was prepared, who prepared these teachers? Were they going to a university?
No, they went to four-year university.
Okay, okay.
They weren't shipping them to Relay and places
okay.
like this.
I was afraid
this.
At first that that was
yeah.
the whole point
so,
of it because of the name.
I'm in this meeting, and I'm thinking that people want to develop the same type of program there. And I'm thinking, one, this idea of grow your own, people didn't realize it, was actually practiced back in 1932 in Wichita, Kansas, and at different times. Even in the late 60s, there was a similar kind of program that brought juniors and seniors into, during the summer, brought them to college campuses. They would spend 6 weeks living on campus, taking classes, and the idea was to get them to be motivated to want to go to college, because they went out and got kids from poverty areas, and they wanted to, the program was called Upward Bounds. I don't know if anyone knows that program. I taught in that program, I think the first year that it was put online. I was invited to come and teach introductory sociology to juniors and senior high school juniors and seniors, and to be a counselor more or less there. And this Grow Your Own remind me pretty much of that program. And so I'm thinking that back then the idea was to get kids coming from, say, the low-income areas, poverty areas, who would be first-generation college students and hopefully graduates, and the name Upward Bound would be a way to get them into the social mobility sort of thing. But then contrasting that to this Grow Your Own program, and it's inspired by the fact that you have these shortages. And let me give you some quick statistics right quick. Last year, a study came out, and this study was reported in the Washington Post, September 14, 2016, and it said there was 60,000 teacher shortage last year. And something that you had mentioned about teacher prep programs, they said there was a 35% drop in enrollment in teacher prep program from 2009 to 2014. And that if the situation continues, that figure of 60,000 shortage will rise to 100,000 and either stabilize or continue to grow into the future. And that every state has this problem of teacher shortage. And I'm looking and I'm thinking, yeah, it's a teacher shortage. If you go around and fire teachers, if you go around and put teachers in a teacher jail, if you go around and harass and intimidate, threaten teachers, yes. If you renegotiate contracts where you take away benefits, where you reduce pay, or you don't you get teachers and teachers union to basically give you back money so that supposedly you can operate your school, yes, you would definitely have a teacher shortage. So the question became, and hence the title of the show, was this a manufactured crisis or natural crisis? And I think that's a good question in the sense that going further, over the next few years, it was projected that there would be massive, massive retirement. This would be a natural phenomenon. People who went into teaching 30 years ago, 35 years ago, they are more than approaching the time in which they can retire. And given the environment that teachers find themselves now, they're expecting tens of thousands of teachers to retire. And so to me, when I said, is this manufactured or natural, teachers retiring en masse, that's natural, but it also could be forced retirement in terms of the working conditions so bad, I got to get out of here. So you can either call that natural or you could call it manufactured. But I can see that as something that's natural. And go ahead.
Well, teachers are really suffering and have for 30 years of a lack of respect. This country does not respect the teachers, the profession of teaching. And so, you know, teachers do feel driven out. They do. I mean, the whole point of Teach for America, they said there was a teacher shortage, and that's why Teach for America came about. And even today, Teach for America talks about a teacher shortage. That's why we needed Teach for America. But, you know, back in around 2010, we learned that that teachers in Chicago, Chicago had contracted out for Teach for America, but the Illinois University System was pumping out teachers right and left. They had like 300 credentialed teachers that wound up competing with Teach for America. So we're not always privy to the right information about how our programs are working for teachers. But, you know, you're really right when you suggest that teachers just, aren't really, that they're kind of being driven out of the profession to make way for, what do you think, James? What do you think they're being pushed out for? What do you think is going to replace them?
Well, the theme of this show for the last 3 years, the privatization of everyone and everything.
Mm-hmm.
To me, everything that we've experienced, starting back with Reagan, and I've said this 100 times so people don't get bored and go to turn television on, starting with Reagan and a nation at risk, and I even take it back to Sputnik, when Sputnik was launched in the 50s, and
right.
American education system was blamed for the Russians being able to get ahead of the U.S. because Russia had better schools and higher quality students and teachers and et cetera. So depending on how far you want to go back, that's when the war on public education, in my view, started.
Mm-hmm.
Bush, of course, in 2001, 2002, with no child left behind, to me, and I've said this many of the time, was a formal declaration of war. But the bottom line has always been, especially starting with Reagan and Thatcher and Yao Ping and Pinochet, you know, the big four that I always talk about when it comes to neoliberalism, neoconservatism, that it's privatization. It's get the government, quote, out of the people's lives, small government, and put everything in the hands of the market.
Right.
The free market. Milton Friedman's concept of choice, competition, the free market. And all of education is happening to teachers, yes, but the idea is that at some point, if they get their way, neighborhood schools will be gone. You already know that.
Mm-hmm.
But the school building that we all know will possibly be gone.
Yes.
What you, I think, was leading me to was to say what you had said a few minutes ago, and that is this personalized learning,
yeah.
where you, with a computer, and you could be at home with that computer. And matter of fact, what is it? Estimate that you could do that for $1,500 per student. And here in New York, where they give, was it close to $19,000 per student? Look at the profit margin.
Exactly.
If you could get that implemented. 80% of the, those are 50 million students that we have. If you could get 50%, 80%, 90% under that model. And in order to do that, you got to get rid of teachers and teachers' unions.
Exactly.
I know I'm sounding, I'm repeating myself over the last 3 years, but this is, to me, the reality. This is the manufactured part of the crisis.
Right,
you
right.
You have to get rid of the teachers, and in order to do that, where there are teachers' union, you got to get rid of the teachers' union. So that's... is what is driving this. So in essence, I've just answered that question, at least in terms of my view of the answer, is that it's more manufactured than natural.
No, I agree completely. I mean, I think that is where everything's leading. I think that's the end game. And I think that's been the drive for a long time. And I find it just really interesting that, you know, that someone like Bill Gates, for example, has so much power in education. I mean, Diane Ravitch called him the superintendent of education, didn't she, a couple years ago? So many people from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have been working even in the Department of Ed. And, you know, where does he, I mean, his whole outlook on life has to do with technology. So what would we expect if we put someone like that kind of in charge of driving ed policy? I mean, we're going to wind up, you know, focus more on technology. And certainly technology has wonderful things about it. I mean, it can be used by a teacher in remarkable ways, and it can really be an effective way of instruction. But to get rid of the really personalized instruction of a human being is quite troubling, especially when we see kids online so much of the time, that to think that they're also going to do all of their learning by computer or by some kind of tech device is, you know, quite worrisome, I think, as to what society will be like. It's really, to me, in some ways quite frightening. But, you know, also with teaching, I think that we have to think in terms of socialization and what putting kids online for everything will do to that. It just doesn't seem like we'll be communicating with one another right, and it seems to be like leading to some kind of dystopian society, if you know what I mean.
1984.
Yeah. You know, it's just, what will the future bring? I mean, and learning on through tech devices can be different, too. I mean, when I taught high school, technology, you know, the internet was just, you know, it was really a wonderful thing to use, but kids would get their information so quickly without having to really think about it. And it's always interesting when I hear words like deep thinking or deep learning, because I think tech does just the opposite sometimes. It's like a very, it's a surface kind of learning. It's like you can quickly find something so fast, then you can read about it. But to do any kind of real study or digging into the topic is a little bit more, you know, you have to really work at that. And for children's literature even, you know, I've seen beautiful programs where a children's book is portrayed online, where the pictures are moving, and it can be very attractive to a little kid to look at that. However, that child doesn't have to work at getting the information. You see what I'm saying? They don't have to create the picture in their head. They're just it's all out there. They just see it. They don't have to do much to get that information. It's like putting a kid in front of a television all day. I mean, they never have to read a book and think about what the words say. It's all just out there for them. So it's a very different kind of learning that...
it's a slippery slope, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you wonder how we will be as a people in the future when our minds aren't made to kind of work the way they used to. They'll get information so easily, so readily, but it won't be something that you have to really work very hard at. I think that will really change us as a people in a lot of ways. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense, but...
You are to me, because I've talked about this in the past when I was doing the series on neoliberalism. I think it was the very last show in that first series. The first series was five or six shows, and I talked about the ultimate goal of neoliberalism was to a remaking of humanity. And that remaking of humanity is exactly what you're describing, and I will probably revisit that sometime soon. I'm also have been working on doing a series on ed technology, and especially as it centers around personalized learning, competency learning, and what it is, what I think is driving it, which we've talked about a little bit here, and have some people on who've been blogging about it and sharing posts about it for the last year or so. But as it relates to this crisis and the question of manufactured or is it natural, yes, there is, that's part of it. And one of the things that in your article that you did, you talked about more than a dozen things that were happening that you felt was contributing to this shortage. Is that something that we can talk about now, or should we wait until next
week?
No,
we can talk about that now, sure. Let me see if
I
can find that article.
Well,
probably know what it is I wrote. Let me just double check here. But see which article. I've written about the teacher shortage quite a few times. The best post I did was the age discrimination one. I don't know if that's the one you're referring
to. This one you had about 15 points.
Okay. That might be the one where I was talking about Orlando, which brought on Teach for America, but they were also talking about... there are a number of reasons that when you talk about manufactured crisis, and again, I think it's leading mostly to creating personalized learning and stuff. But I think again, just not trying to attract teachers, not having teacher education programs address some of the realistic problems that are facing schools. I think a lot of the ed schools just kind of keep rolling along with the same old programs and don't maybe address some of these issues. And I don't know if they know that they're even threatened by outside programs like Relay and a lot of the fellow programs that they have. And to me, that's... really a change in how you make a teacher. James, I received an email the other day talking about how it had something to do with blogging, but they were talking about if you have an idea, you can just put it out there and become a teacher online. You can teach whatever your idea is. And I thought that's really kind of like the badges that we hear about now and everything, mm-hmm. where teachers, you know, if you have an idea, you can become a teacher. You don't need to have credentials, really. And that's just truly frightening. If you replace the teachers that you lose with anybody and don't address, you know, the regulations that you should have to create a real teacher profession, then who will be teaching our kids in the future? I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think should be very worrisome to parents. And I try to tell parents to always ask their teachers, their kids' teachers, where they come from, you know. It would be nice if schools would tell that information. I mean, if you go to the doctor, you usually see the doctor's degrees on the wall. And I think that teachers should put their degrees on the wall as well. They should show where they're coming from so that parents know that they're real teachers and they're not coming from some online program. There are so many online programs and distant learning programs now that make becoming a teacher so easy, but you have to question how good they are, you know? So it's, I think, really changing the face of teaching in a lot of ways.
In your article, The Manufactured Shortage, okay. Driving Teachers Out of the Classroom, and you listed some things that you felt were the cause behind driving teachers out. And the first one you listed was the lack of control. Teachers are told what and how to teach without being given any input, and that in itself is changing the nature of the job, is taking the creativity away from the teachers. We both are teachers, that all of a sudden someone's telling me, you're going to teach by the numbers, by the script, and I've got all of the experience and I've got the knowledge and I know how to communicate with kids of all ages, and you take that away from me. That could be, and this is just your first point, a very strong contributing factor to teachers leaving. I'm going to take it that you meant by this that could be a factor that would cause teachers to leave on their own accord, not being pushed out per se, but that was just one of the things you mentioned. The next thing you mentioned was high-stakes testing. Teachers understand that high-stakes testing is bad for children. They don't want to be part of this. I guess cognitive dissonance here.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, testing testing has, I think, pushed out. And in fact, when I was listening to a news report about the difficulty Teach for America is having recruiting teachers, one of the problems they have, too, is that there's been so much high-stakes testing. Testing has dominated the classroom for so long, and teachers, you know, it's a tiring thing to test. If you do it even once a year, the whole school kind of drops everything, and it's not very much fun. It's not the enjoyable part of teaching. And when you base everything around prepping for a test and you have the pressure of knowing that you're going to be evaluated according to testing, then it just becomes a real chore and very difficult. And so I think the testing problem has been really serious. But we also have to recognize that with personalized learning, they're changing all of that, and the testing is going to be online constantly, all the time.
Every minute.
That's right. And so the teacher really is far removed from that. There will be none of it. Teachers kind of have been sort of pushed out of that whole scene now because the computer will take over with the testing. But so all that testing, I think, has been a part of the privatization process. And when you were talking about lack of control, I think that also came about with Common Core. You know, Common Core was sort of foisted on teachers. And when you're teaching, you like to come up with your own ideas. I mean, teachers go into teaching usually because they enjoy the act of preparing lessons and thinking of interesting ways to approach their class. And suddenly you have standards that are very regimented. We had that with No Child Left Behind. And so you're trying to get all of your stuff together with regular standards. And then the next thing you know, you have Common Core, which is so much of it isn't even related to a child's development, especially the earlier years. And so teachers are trying to deal with closed reading and all these things that come about with that that they've had no control over. So that's been a real deterrent also. But and then you add large class sizes. I found my blog post, James, so I know what you're talking about now. But, large class sizes have always been a problem. And the people who are the reformers have always tried to act like it didn't matter. It's especially important for very young children. The K through third graders, really benefit from having a smaller class size where they can learn reading and all the things that you learn in the early ages. So those are really serious issues that I think kind of push teachers out of the profession. I know I've thought about returning to teaching, but I don't think for one thing, I'm older now and they're not going to take me because I've had so many years of experience. I'm on the higher level as far as the pay goes. So that's one of the reasons they like to keep, younger teachers too. But it's just there's so many limitations as to what you can do, and you're told by so many people who've never even been in the classroom or have taught children, how to teach. So those are all real deterrents, I think, to...
Nancy, I have a smile on my face here because that same issue has popped up. I have said that I'm working from my bucket list, and there are things that I want to do before I'm no longer able to do or I'm dead or what have you. And going back to teaching at the university level was one of the things on my list. And recently, this was brought up, like, wow, would love to have you teach in this area and this area, and what do you think about that? And at first, I almost said, yes, absolutely. I ended up saying, I don't know if I would last beyond a minute in today's classroom, in that I grew up in the era of academic freedom. I grew up in the era where students came to hopefully get an education, to learn, and not to buy a commodity called education, not to be in an environment where the buyer is always right. You know that marketing or business slogan, the customer is always right, and you have to satisfy the customer and come in where students, if they don't like what you have on your reading list, they can go complain to the chairman or the dean, and you may be asked to remove something from your reading list. And I went, that's in no way in hell for me. And also, there was some other thing, and I would not come back as an adjunct. If I were to come back, it would be a visiting professor. I'd even consider a visiting lecturer, but an adjunct, no way.
Yeah, I've been that route. I know what you're talking about with adjuncts.
The way adjuncts are treated, it was just no way. That would be such a disgraceful thing for me to do, given my knowledge, experience, my preparation over the decades. No, wouldn't do that. That's why I was smiling. Back to your list, Nancy. Let me just read some of the topics.
Lack of control, lousy school conditions testing is one I'd like to throw in there too, because I've experienced that as a teacher. And there's nothing worse than working in a poor school where you have a bad situation where your class, where you don't have an appropriate classroom. I taught in a portable that was out behind a band room once, And I had kids that some of them had ADHD. And, you know, the band was really remarkably good, but it just wasn't a good place to have a classroom. And sometime I'm going to show the classroom that I had because the portable was really interesting in and of itself. But this school had a lot of problems. They were remodeling, and it was just a really, really awful place to teach for a while because they should have taken the kids and put them someplace else. The whole school was under construction. It was just awful. And, you know, that happens more than we know, and nobody ever talks about that as a problem for teachers, but it is, and it's a really unpleasant situation when you don't have a decent classroom or don't have a good school environment. That's something that a lot of people don't realize about teaching, I think. So, but go ahead. You can mention the other things on this.
Okay, the high-stakes testing, the limited curriculum, large class size, non-supportive school administrators, the loss of good libraries, the loss of support staff, data collection, Common Core, which we already talked about, standards in general, you know, lousy school condition, which you just mentioned, poor teacher resources, lack of respect, disregard for poverty and child difficulties outside of school, lack of special education and ELL support for general education teachers, professional development that is uninspiring, and overemphasis on digital instruction. When I looked at your list, and first thing I thought was, these are all individual things that most definitely, either in combination or cumulative, would drive a teacher out of the profession.
Sure.
These are individual, personalized things as opposed to, I want to say structural things, structural in the sense, the big picture thing, that the way in which education has been reconfigured now, public education, so that you have all of these large forces driving what takes place, the shape of education today, and then driving what takes place within education. And if we look at it in that sense, where these points that you point out, I'm using the word twice, that you point out here, in sociology, we would say if these things were happening to one teacher here, one teacher there, one teacher over here, this would be an individual problem. But when these same factors start impacting hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, it becomes a social problem, mm-hmm. becomes an issue. Then it can become a crisis. So that there is a relationship here between the macro forces and how they impact upon large classes of individuals, making those individuals going into personal crises, so that there's a relationship is what I'm trying to get. So that, yes, it boils down to, it's, I'm going to say this, and I hate using this word all, and I said this to you guys before, but yes, it all boils down to, in my view, a manufactured crisis. Mm-hmm. There's nothing natural about this. Yes, retirement, yes. You get your silver watch. You know, those old days when they gave you a silver watch or a gold watch, and you say, adios. And when that happens, when there's tens of thousands of doing it because they reach the age, as I mentioned before, 60, 65, 55, whatever it is, that would become a real natural crisis. We're not there yet. We are having a real crisis, but it's manufactured. And yes, I'm going to say it's a crisis. Some would say it's a problem and hasn't reached the crisis level yet. I would say no, folks. It is a crisis. And I'll go one step further. I'm going to do, after Nancy, you and I do part two, probably the beginning of the year, I'm going to do another series that I've been working on for some time, that this crisis is impacting different segments of the profession, specifically teachers of color, and more specifically black teachers. Mm-hmm. It is a hell of a crisis for black teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with New Orleans, when 6,000, I think, teachers were let go. Most of those were black teachers. Chicago.
Right.
Most of those were black teachers. Detroit. Most of those black teachers. All the urban centers. It is a crisis, folks. It is a manufactured crisis. People who are behind the crisis know exactly what they're doing. And there is a purpose. There's an agenda, the old Machiavellian agenda, raising his head again. And, Nancy, it's what you and I talked about a few minutes ago. The end game. The end game is drive out the teachers and their benefit package, including retirement packages.
Oh, yeah.
If you can do that, if you can do that, you save billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And if you temporarily need to bring in Teach for America, or people from relay schools, people from the Broad Academy, that's fine, because that's going to be minimal cost compared to the veteran teachers and their unions. And then you eventually, when you get the personalized learning set up going, and you can have people stay at home, or you have people go to a facility and sit in front of a computer. And this popped in my head yesterday. I was at a library, university library here, which is my second home now. And I was sitting yesterday, and it was Saturday. A lot of people don't go to the library. I do. And I was in this big, huge room. I'm the only person there. It's in where the stacks are. I get up to go to the bathroom, and I pass the room, a nice-sized room, and it's jam-packed. Everyone is looking at a computer monitor.
Right.
When I go downstairs to talk to the reference librarian, I pass several nice-sized rooms, and everyone is there looking at computer monitors. And I'm saying, I'm up in this big room by myself. Okay, I'm old school. I'm in the stacks. I'm going to get the books. I'm coming. I'm reading, and I'm going to get another book. This is what they want. They want everyone in front of that computer monitor, and it's going to take them time to get rid of the human teacher, but it's on its way. You're going to let, you can close this out. We only have about a minute and a half to, Nancy, so you can close this out with your closing remarks.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, along with that, yesterday I was in Home Depot, and there was a mom pushing her child. It was just a little toddler, and he was holding her little phone looking at the screen. And I was thinking, you know, usually you give kids a little book to look at when, you know, to try to occupy their time or something, but here's this little toddler looking at his mom's iPhone, and I was just thinking that kind of tells a story. And I've seen that happen before, too, and along with that, I've gone for walks in the neighborhood and seen people who I didn't know that lived, you know, further out. I used to live in a pretty large neighborhood, and they'd be talking. I thought they were talking to me, but they were online talking to somebody, you know, and I just think we need so much to connect with each other, and we're doing just the opposite with all the tech stuff, and, you know, in moderation, it's maybe okay, but I think it's beyond that. And certainly driving teachers out of the classroom to create an all-tech school is certainly disruptive, which is what they call it. But I question whether it's disruptive in a good way. You know, I don't think...
No, Nancy, I'm going to stop you. It's not disruptive. It's destructive.
I agree. You know, I think it
is. That concept comes from one of the founders of the neoliberal thing, and he said that it would be necessary to destroy.
But they use it in a positive. They use the disruptive in a positive. Clayton Christensen, Michael Horn.
Okay, I got 30 seconds. We have to go.
Okay. Folks, well, thanks, James. It's always nice to talk to you.
Thank you, and we'll be on next week. Okay. Thanks, everyone, and have a good rest of your Sunday. Okay? Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.